abstract art. Sure, it's supposed to be a heart with an arrow through it, huh? Isn't that what it's supposed to be? Good imagination,
yeah. I see the bottom half of the heart.
Yeah. It's the bottom half of the heart, right? And the thing going through inside is an arrow.
You can tell a guy did that.
Yeah,
really? It's supposed to look like something?
Okay, boys and girls, let's try the same thing we're talking about yesterday from a different angle. We'll come at it from a different angle. This is actually the way Rav Dessa does it. I just gave the conclusion yesterday, but I'll give it the way he does it, and then we'll start with the conclusion again, and then we'll push on. What makes grass grow? Rav Dessa says, gosh, ask anybody that question. He'll tell you it's very easy. You put the seed in the ground. That should be the right kind of ground. You know, it should be all chalk or something. Dirt, regular dirt. And you provide water. And I guess temperature should be reasonable temperature. It shouldn't be 20 degrees below zero. And sunlight. If you keep it in the dark, you'll have trouble. Won't grow. And then it'll grow. So Lester says, I didn't ask you when it will grow. I didn't ask you under what conditions it will grow. I asked you what makes it grow. What makes it grow? What forces it to grow? All you did is describe the conditions. Of course, anybody who's dealt with a lawn knows that you have to meet certain conditions, otherwise it won't grow. But I asked you what makes it grow. So, the Tesla says, well, the answer will be, but what are you talking about? That's how lawns grow. You know, try leaving one out, and you'll see, it won't grow. And when you put them all in, they grow. That's what happens all the time. So the Tesla says, so when I ask you what makes it grow, you answer me, this is how it always happens. In a certain sense, you're not answering my question. You're just telling me when it grows. You're not telling me what makes it grow. Now, I want to push this line of questioning deeper. Augusta doesn't really do this, but I think it's important to do it because to understand his idea. Suppose someone said, look, if you're talking to somebody 500 years ago, when they didn't have modern science, you know, it's the great God that solves all problems. Of course, what could he say? Put it in the soil, reasonably warm, sunlight, water, air, it'll grow. Ah, but today, with microscopes, we're very advanced. With microscopes, we can see that the grass is made up of cells. All living things are made of cells. And we can see the cells dividing when you put the nutrients in. And we can see the nutrients being absorbed with the water into the roots and going up the internal pathways inside the plant. So we know what makes it grow. Aha. So this is what makes it grow. When you put the water in the soil, then the roots, with their little hairs, those roots absorb the water. That is to say, if there's water in the soil, it goes into the roots. And then it goes up those little canals inside. And it's carrying up little bits of dirt. If you look under the microscope, you can see the little bits of dirt going up. And then they go to the cells, and there's a cell wall that goes through the cell wall, and inside certain chemical changes take place, and the cell gets bigger and bigger, and certain parts get duplicated, and that's what happens. That's what happens. The water is absorbed by the root. See, we know a lot more than we knew before. We have much, much expanded information. The water goes up those little canals, and then the little pieces come to the cell wall, and the cell wall, some things go through the cell wall, and some things don't go through the cell wall. Now, I think what Dester's response is going to be, you have given me a much more elaborate picture of what happens. But have you showed me what makes it happen? Before we said, you put in the water and it grows. Now we say a lot more. You put in the water and the water is absorbed by the roots, and the roots communicated up through the little pipes, and then it comes to the cell wall, and some goes through it, some doesn't go through it, in the cell wall, things are duplicated. You have a much longer story to tell. But is the story a new story, or is it just more information in the old story? It seems to me you're telling me more and more about what happens. But I don't see anything in the story that tells me what makes it happen, why it has to happen, what forces it to happen. You've just told me a lot more about what happens. And if I ask you, why? What makes these things go through the cell wall and other things not go through the cell wall? What are you going to say? Well, we tried it with lots and lots of cells, and that's the way it works. You know, just these things go through and those things don't go through, which is more, this is what happens all the time. It sounds, what Jester will say, like more information in the old story, not a new story, not a story telling me a new idea, an idea of what makes it happen. It's just more of what happens. Let's take it another step. You know, the cell wall. Why do these certain things go through the cell wall and certain things not? Well, if you think of it simplistically, the cell wall has holes in it. And those holes have different shapes. So through a round hole, a round thing can go through. And through a square hole, a square thing can go through. And through a curlicue hole, a curlicue thing can go through. And different holes take through different things. What do you mean they take through different things? Why doesn't a square thing go through a round hole? Why doesn't a round thing go through a square hole? Isn't the answer really? Well, every time we watch it, you know, the square thing bounces off the round hole and the square thing goes through the square hole. We see that. Every time you look, that's what happens every time. Good. So what am I getting? More information about what happens every time. If you look at it, if you watch it, you'll see that this is how things happen. Good. So this is, don't get me wrong, this is all valuable information. It's all valuable information. It really is progress. But it's all progress in one dimension. It's all progress describing more and more what happens. It doesn't tell me why, what makes it happen. Let's think of it in macroscopic terms. You know, I'm trying to put a ball through a brick wall, and there are holes in the brick wall. And there's a round hole about the same size as the ball, and it goes smoothly through. And I have a square, and the corners stick out, and it doesn't go through. So you say, see, can't you see? The wall is there, and it's stopping it. You know, you push, there's resistance. The wall's in the way. Now, how do I know when I push the ball up to the hole? And it doesn't fit the hole. How do we know it won't go through? How do we know that the wall will stop it? Maybe the wall will just melt away. Or maybe it'll just interpenetrate. You know, when you put coffee in your milk, or milk in your coffee, depends on what proportion you like, right? It isn't like oil and water. The milk doesn't sit on top of the coffee. It goes right inside. And then it's Somehow, it just doesn't stop it. And so how come when you push the ball up to the wall and you come to the hole, it doesn't fit? How come it just doesn't go through anyway? And the answer will be, well, try it. You know, try it a few 100,000 times if you've got the patience. And you see, every time when you push it there, it doesn't go through. So, that you know, that's the way the world is. We just live in a world where square things don't go through round holes. Correct. What are you being told? That's the way it always happens. That's all you're being told. That's the way it always happens. But if someone asks, what makes it happen that way? Now, the 20th century scientists will say, come on. Listen, we have molecules. Molecules. They're not talking about balls and walls. Now, we're really down to the nitty-gritty. We have these molecules, and we can see. Even in atoms, you know, the molecules are made out of atoms. I can tell you exactly the shape of how the atoms are arranged together. The molecules fold on themselves because of certain electric connections between the parts and so forth and so on. That's great. So you have these molecules, and you look at them, and you say, this is what they do. Right. This is what they do. But what makes them do it. And the answer for molecules and atoms is, if you look at them and test them and watch them, this is what they always do. They say, come on, again, in the middle of the 20th century, we have particles, we have protons and neutrons and electrons and muons and pions and, you know, as many ions as you like. Probably there's an infinity of them as you go to higher and higher energies. And we know two protons positively charged repel each other. They push each other apart. Two electrons negatively charged push each other apart. Proton and electron attract each other. Opposite charges attract. Like magnets. You see? That's how it happens. That's why it happens. That's what makes it happen. Say, well, why is that? What makes two protons push each other apart, two electrons push each other apart, and a proton and electron stick together? What makes that happen? What makes it happen? I'm not asking you what happens. I'm asking you what makes it happen. And the answer is, look, you watch them long enough and you'll see. That's what they do. That's what they always do. And every occasion, they always behave the same way. Every time we've looked at it, we've always seen the same thing. Two protons push each other apart. Two electrons push each other apart. Proton and electron attract each other. That's just the way it is. You see the point here? The point is, as you go to each level deeper gives you new information. But it's new information on the old story. It's just more and more of what happens. None of it tells you why it got to happen that way, why it must happen that way, what forces it to happen that way. If someone would discover tomorrow two protons that attract each other, there's no bar against that. Just hasn't happened up until now, but no one could say that it couldn't happen tomorrow. It's just our universe doesn't work that way because whenever we look, we don't see that happening. So the question, what makes it happen, whether you start with grass or go down to cells or go down to molecules or atoms or particles, there doesn't seem to be anything that we've learned that's in the right category. It's not in the right category to explain what makes it happen. All it does is repeat in finer detail what happens, or if I put it like poetry, what happens to happen. This is what happens to happen. You know, just happens that way. The only way you could know about it is taking a look. You see it happens. You say, okay, that's what I see, so I assume that's the way it'll be. But I don't get a clue as to something that makes it happen that way, forces it to happen that way. It has to happen this way and no other way. There's nothing of that quality in the whole scientific description. The question still alive. Okay, now, why is this important? Because, as I said yesterday, if somebody tells you that on a particular occasion something different happened, the question is how much resistance you're going to have to that. If you thought you could see what makes it happen, and somebody tells you, I saw it different, you're going to be very skeptical. Because you know what makes it happen. It's got to happen. It's forced to happen. There's no other way that something can happen because you know what makes it happen. So you'll be very skeptical. When you realize that you don't have a clue what makes anything happen, you just know what things normally happen. Then, although there will be some resistance, and there should be some resistance, it shouldn't be nearly the same kind of resistance. Attitude ought to be is, well, I haven't seen such a thing. So, if it happens at all, it happens very rarely. Things that happen very rarely, people could make mistakes about, and you know, they're not familiar with, they don't understand them very well. So, I'll be cautious. But I won't rule it out as an impossibility. Because I don't have any reason to think that anything is impossible. The analogy of Tesla gives is a movie picture. A movie picture which, as you know, is a matter of showing frames very rapidly, 18 frames a second or 24 frames a second. You don't see the individual pictures as they flash on the screen because your mind, your brain, doesn't pick up the differences that fast. But they are really separate pictures. Each picture is a totally separate picture. In fact, although they don't do it anymore because it's against the law, but I remember when they invented subliminal advertising. So here you'll be watching a movie picture, let's say of horses, and about two-thirds of the way through the film, all of a sudden, most of the people in the audience get up and go out and order a Coke at the drink stand. Why? Because the manufacturers of Coke stuck in one frame with all these frames of the horses, you know, galloping and the dust and the trees and the birds and the sky, and then one frame that says, get a Coke. And then it goes on with the horses. Now, your conscious mind doesn't register that one frame. But the unconscious mind perceives it, and suddenly you're very thirsty for a Coke, you know. Not for jump, not for spring, not for kindling, for Coke. Now, they took that out because it's really not fair to a person to sort of hypnotize it like that. They're all gone by Coke. But what it proves is this.
It was proven that it didn't work.
Really?
Yeah. My business teacher told me.
And it didn't work? Okay, I was under the impression that it didn't work. But the point is. Uh-huh. Okay, whatever it is. But the point is this, nobody noticed it, right? Nobody noticed the desert. Why? Because it's only one frame out of hundreds, and they're going by 24 a second. You don't consciously perceive it that way. But my point here is this. Why is there an order in the frames in a movie? There's an order because the producer puts it there. I know in a book he'd be called an editor, right? The movie is called the producer. The producer puts it there. He puts it there because he wants the audience to have an experience that makes sense, a coherent experience. If you put the pictures together in a jumble, you won't get a coherent experience. So he puts them together, and each picture is really very, very similar to the one that comes right before and the one that comes right afterwards. I realize that's redundant. So that the changes that you see are very gradual changes. They're getting 24 a second. If one picture and six pictures down were very different, you wouldn't have time to register it. You'd feel just completely unbalanced. So the changes are very gradual. The producer organizes the pictures in a certain order so that the changes are gradual so that you'll be able to make sense of the experience. Says Rav Dessler, our world is just like a movie picture. Our world is a separate production, moment by moment. Only the producer, capital P, who's making it, creates it in an order so that each moment's creation is very similar to the moment before and the moment after, so that we can make sense out of it. Since I have been sitting here for 17 minutes, this table, we say this table, as if there were only one, but there have been trillions and trillions of tables, a new table every instant, a new table every instant, only HaKadosh Baruch Hu creates each new table to look very much like the old table, because if he didn't, we would not be able to perceive it and deal with it as a coherent table at all. And we wouldn't be able to understand our world and act in it. We'd be lost. So, each moment is really an entirely separate moment. Now, if each moment is an entirely separate moment, it's an entirely separate creation. Then anything can happen in the next moment, just like the producer of the movie picture can put in, buy a Coke, or as he says, put in a picture of a desert scene. What you're really watching is an experiment going on in a laboratory. And in the middle of the experiment in the laboratory, there's a desert scene, which then influences you to think you're thirsty and you go out and buy a Coke. Right? How did a desert scene get into a laboratory picture? Because the producer can do whatever he wants. He can stick in any picture he wants anywhere. He just usually chooses to put them in a certain order. So here, what we call a nace, what we call the miracle of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, makes a moment, or something in a moment, which really is out of the ordinary. It doesn't flow according to the normal progress that he usually makes. Correct. He makes it flow in a different way. But there's no bar to doing this, any more than there's a bar to the producer sticking in whatever pictures he wants in the middle of this film. He's the producer. He can put in any pictures he wants. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu can put in any moments that he wants, or any contents to any moment that he wants. The previous moment has no influence on the next moment. The previous moment has no influence on the next moment. It doesn't make it be anything. It doesn't make it be anything. Only the policy of the producer is such that he wants it to have a certain coherence, wants it to have a certain order. So he chooses it to fulfill that order. But there's no direct connection between one frame and the next frame. There's no connection at all. And therefore, there's no bar whatsoever from HaKadosh Baruch Hu making things according to patterns most of the time, and then from time to time, making things that are not according to patterns. You understand me? Yeah.
So we only learn things by experience, right? We only learn things because this is what happens for some time. So why can't you just say that we don't understand why it's happening, but you don't have to say that there's something outside making it happen. We just can't see why it's happening. We don't know why it's happening. It doesn't mean that something outside needs to be making it happen.
Strictly speaking, you're right. I've not given you all of Hume's argument, and I've left out the part that would answer your question. What I have shown you is that all that we ever discover, all that we have ever discovered, I'll accept your point, I'll change my vocabulary, all we have ever discovered is all in one category. That leaves the other category up to present as simply empty. Now he says, maybe there's something other category we haven't discovered yet. Maybe, but notice how radical a proposition this is. We're talking about something where to date the whole category is empty. We don't even know how to go about looking for this thing. Is that a proof there isn't any such thing? No, it's not a proof. But it does mean that we really don't even know where to look or what it would be to find it. Hume went a step further. Hume analyzed how people know things. He said there are only two ways that you know things. And he said, if you think about this category of what makes things happen, you'll see that you're not going to get it through either category of knowing things. And if those are the only two ways of knowing things, then you're cooked. But you do need that extra part of the argument. And that's really the heart of Hume's argument that makes him famous. And that's where you could fight, perhaps. It's enough for us, at least, to understand that a person says the category is absolutely empty is not running against anything we know. He's certainly free to take that position. Nothing that we've ever discovered would show him wrong. To make it absolute that it must be so, that requires more of an argument. I agree with you. It's a quite sharp enough, yeah.
Is there that sad to say that not only do we not know the cause, but there is no cause, everything follows from quantum randomness?
No, that's not quite right. Everything follows. Everything follows. It's complicated. I'm not going to go into quantum mechanics now. While you're looking, there is no randomness while you're looking. And there are laws of what happens while you're looking. So it's only what happens when you're not looking. Anyway, so let's go back to what we said yesterday at the very beginning. We said a miracle, the first shot, the first pass was a miracle is when God breaks the laws of nature or interferes with the laws of nature. You see now that description is very misleading. There's nothing there to break. There's nothing there to interfere with. The idea of God interfering means there's a thing sitting there all by itself, just sort of sitting there. And then God does something to it. But now we see there's nothing to sit there. But this thing is the following analogy. He said, some people will tell you, it's like looking through a keyhole. Look through a keyhole and you see a pen moving on a piece of paper, writing on a piece of paper. So you say, oh, that's silly. It's not a pen writing. Obviously somebody's holding it. And that's why it's writing. I may not see the person holding it, but obviously a pen doesn't write by itself. So someone must be holding it and moving it to write. And the thought is that that's what our world is like. Things happen. Only they look like they happen by themselves. No, you have to understand that somebody's holding it and making it happen. So this analogy is wrong. This analogy is wrong. It gives too much credit. It pretends that there's a pen. Only somebody's holding it and moving it. There isn't even a pen. Even that's a mistake. It's not that the table's here, and then what makes it sit on the floor? Because God is making the law of gravity work. It's that there really isn't a table. There's a new creation every moment, and each moment it's a brand new thing. Of course, then what happens to it is God doing it, because its whole existence with all its characteristics, all its qualities, all its relationships, all of it is being recreated moment by moment. Yeah.
Why does the thing get old? New every day.
It's the same.
It's creating an old table.
You're getting old.
Yeah.
I'm getting old too.
Yeah, right. So the answer is that God wants it to be created according to a certain pattern, for the same reason that this table doesn't suddenly grow wings and fly away, because God wants the creation to follow a certain pattern. Part of that pattern is things getting older. and then ultimately dying, and then ultimately dissolving. That's part of the pattern that he wants. But it's only because he wants that pattern. There's nothing in it that has to happen that way. Indeed, things could grow younger. And you could alternate and go back and forth. You know, they're older and grow younger, and they're older and younger. We oldies have an expression, youth is wasted on the young. You know, you're young, you're full of energy and enthusiasm, and you haven't got the brains to know what to do. I mean, okay. That's only the oldies talking. Yeah, over the hill.
Does that stop creating stuff on Shabbos?
Oh, good question. Good question. What happens on Shabbos? The answer is this. What happened on Shabbos is that what happened in the first 6 days stopped. That's what Shabbos is. Shabbos is stopping what happened in the first 6 days. What happened in the first 6 days? Each day, a new category came into the world. A new category came into the world. After the first 6 days, no new categories come into the world. That's what stops. There are no new categories. Only combinations of old categories. But recreating the things of the categories, that's something else. That's something else, yeah.
So maybe what these scientists are saying is actually true about things being learned and learned and learned real world.
Okay, this is really a separate question, and I have spoken about this because we just learned it. Air exchange. I don't know exactly how to make the connection between what I'm saying and that, but so then, how old? One second. How old will they really be?
Because you could change anything from youth to.
Good. How old will they really be?
6,000 years.
Okay, that's what you said a moment ago, right? A moment ago you said they would really be millions of years old.
No, you could look as
oh, yeah, of course.
Of course.
100%. But it's not really true. That's right. Yeah. No question. No question that he could do that. Yeah, so I don't know. At first I thought he meant it could really be millions of years old. And then I didn't see any connection to what I was talking about. Now he says it could look like it's millions of years old, but really not be, because God could make it look that way. And that's certainly true. I think it's true on any view of what God does, but it certainly follows from this view as well. Sure, of course God could.
That's what
nothing makes it be the way it is, other than God making it that way. Nothing inside the world makes a thing be the way it is, or makes something happen. That's true. It only happens that way because God wants that pattern to be in the frames. Each frame is a separate frame, and God makes the pattern, like a producer makes a pattern of in a picture, in a moving picture. Yeah.
In response to this comment, it would seem that, this is a bit off topic, the 6 days of creation, it would seem, can't have been literal 24-hour days because the sun didn't exist until the fourth day, and you can't have literal evenings and mornings without the sun. Also, if there
okay, it is a little off topic. Let's leave it for now. Let's leave it for now. It's an interesting question to examine, and maybe we will examine it not too distant future. But I do want to finish this subject for today anyway. Now, yeah.
Couldn't God create then a millions of year old object within the next moment? You tried.
Say it again. Say it again. And think about what you're saying.
Object millions of years old that has been around for 1 second of our reality.
You really mean the words you're saying?
Yes.
Well, by what count is it millions of years old?
It's being created at the present moment, but it had existed for time before that.
How could it be created at the present moment?
Created
at the present moment means before that it didn't exist.
Our point of view. I mean, once again, if we're only using time, this actually might tie back into the time, what we were saying about time yesterday.
Yeah.
Time is just our way of measuring one progression. If there was an object inserted into reality now, if this object is inserted into reality now, yes. Something up right here.
What do you mean inserted into reality? That makes it sound like it existed beforehand. It was outside of reality, and now it's coming into reality.
From nothing.
Okay. Brand new object, right.
It appears this moment right now.
Yes.
I've been seeing it for a while now. I picked it up a few seconds ago. Is there no way that it could be created now, and then I will think there's a past history to the object? I will think the object for all intents and purposes.
Good. You just introduced the key word. I will think that it has a past history. In other words, it will appear to be millions of years old. It won't really be millions of years old.
Is there a difference?
Oh, boy. Let's sign a contract. And a contract will say, you'll give me a car, and I'll pay you $50,000, and then I'll just, you know, get you to think it.
In this case, everything's tangential. I've been thinking, I've been feeling the actual sensation of holding the cup. I've been actually seeing it in my range of vision.
But where are the millions going to come from?
What?
Where are the millions going to come from?
Instead of knowing as I'm using a minute with the coffee jar.
I mean,
point was to create somehow a great age for a thing which came into existence a few moments ago.
Right.
So I'm asking, by what measurement is this thing of great age? If it really didn't exist before 3 seconds ago, it's brand new, ex nihilo, how then could it be millions of years old? Really millions, not looked millions of years old, but really be millions of years old. If it's going to look, of course you can create anything to look at any way God wants it to look. But you're talking again about how old it really is, which is the way he started, and then he retreated to how it looks because he saw that...
maybe the thing was traveling close to the speed of light or something.
Traveling, yeah.
These tests with the radioactivity, those are just based on the fact that they make you think that the
moon is
years old, they're just not
correct. But listen, no, they're not charlatans. They're not... fakers. They're not out to sell a mistake on the public. But they are based on an assumption. And the assumption is that the speed at which things happen now as we watch them has always been the same. C. Kuchelewski put it to me this way. I think I've mentioned this to some of you before, but it's worth repeating. He said, imagine a Martian, if there were such things, aren't they? But imagine a Martian comes to the Earth and he introduces him to a 16-year-old boy. And he watches him for a year. He watches him grow. How much does a 16-year-old grow in a year? Let's say he's having a growth spurt. 4 inches. Okay? So he was 5 feet tall, and now he's 5'4". Okay? What percentage growth is that? 5 feet is 60 inches. Is 4 out of 60? 1/15. Right? That's how much he grew that year. Now you tell the Martian, this child, this 16-year-old, started off as a single cell, microscopic, and he's now a trillion cells. Now I ask the Martian, how old is he? How long has he been alive? So he says, well, let's see, he grows 1/15 in a year. 1/15 in a year. Now, if he starts off as a single cell, so a year later, the cell will be 1/15 bigger. And 2 years later, it will be 2/15 bigger. It's going to take him an awful long time to get to a trillion cells. It's going to take him a lot of time, maybe quadrillions of years. Right? What's the mistake the Martian is making? You don't grow at the same rate of speed all the time. You start a single cell, and minutes later, it's 2 cells. Or hours later, it's 2 cells. And hours after that, it's 4 cells. And hours after that, it's 8 cells. And you're going up by doubling all the time. The rate of growth is gigantic at the beginning. And then it slows down. If he doesn't know that, and he figures backwards, it's going to be... quadrillions of years, when it's really only 16 years. If you assume that the speed at which things happen now has always been the same, then you'll get one calculation. If you don't assume that, if you think that the speed has been different at other times, then you get an entirely different calculation. They assume that everything has been the way we see it now. That's a basic assumption in all of science. Because if you don't assume that, you can't draw any conclusions about anything. If things were different before you were checking, then the sky's the limit to how it was. So obviously, if you draw any conclusions at all, you assume that everything's always been the same. But it is an assumption. It's an assumption. So they're making that assumption, and they're calculating on the basis of that assumption. It's sort of like seeing somebody at the end of a race, and he's tottering over the finish line. You say, let's see. This is a mile race, and this is how fast he's running, so it must have taken him 26 minutes to run the mile. Is that true? Took him 4.5 minutes. He's a pretty good runner. But by the end, he was tired, you know. He wasn't running the way, ran at the beginning of the race. Beginning of the race, running much faster. So the amount of time, it's much less than you think. Okay, but let me go back to the point I wanted to make. C. see if we can make it before the end. So, the world is being recreated every moment. It's a brand new creation. The patterns are only patterns in what Hakadosh Baruch Hu creates. He's the producer, and he makes it to fulfill certain patterns. So, when we speak about nature, we could talk about nature if we want. Probably to speak of laws of nature will be misleading. It's going to lead us down the wrong path. But nature. Nature is the patterns that Hakadosh Baruch Hu creates. That's what nature is. Then you have things that don't go according to the patterns. Those are what I called yesterday quirks. Strange, odd things. The Parker pen that floats in the air and makes lazy circles until it disappears for no reason whatsoever. That's a quirk. And then sometimes when the pattern breaks, the break in the pattern is a communication. Because Rova waves a flag and says, hello, here I am, you know, pay attention. Sometimes the break in the pattern is a communication. And that's what an ace is. An ace is where Rova waves the flag so you can see him and receive some kind of interaction or receive some kind of message. An ace is the right kind of break in the pattern. It's the kind where you can see that Hakadosh Baruch Hu is behind it, that Hakadosh Baruch Hu is communicating with you through this particular event. Whereas the ones in the pattern, you don't see a communication, and the quirks don't seem to be just quirks, just weird things that happen with no meaning whatsoever. Neither of those is a direct communication. Yeah.
Is it possible that people see, say, that only one
sure. I mean, what happened with Hagar? She's out there, and the water is used up, and she puts Ishmael down, and she goes away, and she starts to cry. And then it says that God opened her eyes, and she saw the well. The simple meaning of the verse is the well was there the whole time. He just didn't let her see it. And then he opened her eyes, and she saw it. Not that a new well was created. It doesn't say God created a well. He opened her eyes, and she saw the well. Sure. Sure, that can happen. Yeah. That's why I lose my keys. It's all gospel.
I'm just saying, two people were looking right here.
Does it ever happen to you? You're looking for something, and somebody says, it's on the table. And you say, it can't be. I looked on the table. And you go look again. And you go back and by golly, there it is, sitting right on the table where you looked. Right where you looked. It's right there, and you missed it.
No, I looked in that place and it just wasn't there.
Never happened to you? Ask your friends whether it happened to them.
I looked exactly in that place
and I wasn't there. Yeah, I looked on the table for my keys and I looked on the table and I didn't see them.
I probably scanned the area and just kind of flew over it.
I'll tell you something else that can happen. You can misunderstand what you see. You know these figures that flip? The duck rabbit figure? Or the vases with the faces? Right? Yeah, I don't know if it happened to you, but when I used to teach, I had a class in philosophy of perception. And you get out these things to people. Some people can only see it one way. But it's faces. Come on, what do you mean? It's a vase. I can see the vase. It's very clear, you know. Here's the stand, and here's the top, and here's the flowers go in. But it's faces. Look again. So I don't know what you're talking about. Where are the faces? You know. And then sometimes they get it. Bang! It switches. Look at that. Look at that. There they are. Right? Now, nothing changed on the paper. Nothing changed. The same paper the whole time. So what changed? Something in here. Something in here changed as to how you look at it. That shows you that you can look at something and miss it and look again and see it. Now, a lot of looking's like that. We look at flat pictures and we see death. Right? When Japan was opened up in the middle of the 1800s, and they showed them paintings, it wasn't photographs, but it was paintings with depth, they couldn't see the depth. You have to be trained to see depth. It's not natural. It's not something that's built into the neural circuits to see depth.
So that's everywhere?
No, in pictures. No, the picture's flat.
When you paint a picture, right?
you use parallel lines and all the rest of that. So you might think that there were people who argued that it was purely natural. The bundle of light rays coming to the retina is the same as the bundle of light rays that comes in the real world, and therefore you have to see it that way, but it's not true. It's not true. You have to be trained to see death. There are things in the world that you have to be trained to see. If you don't, Learn how to see them, you won't see them.
Take those magic eyes.
Like the what?
You have to cross your eyes in a specific way to see the depth in the picture.
That's right. That's right. Those things also. I mean, you look at it, it's just a meaningless jumble of things, and so you defocus your eyes, and bang, it's a three-dimensional picture. Right? So what changed is you, not what's on the page. Anyway, so this is what an ace is. An ace is just something which is not according to the pattern, and in such a way that you can see that the Baruch Hu was communicating with you. But if I ask, what makes it happen? The answer is the same thing that makes everything happen. Of course, Baruch Hu creates the world that way. Now, I think there's one exception to this. There's a problem. The only way I know to get out of the problem is to recognize an exception. I've asked people, and people do agree the problem is a difficult problem, and they do agree it's possible to say what I'm saying. I'm hesitating only because I didn't find anybody to write it. And I'm surprised that nobody wrote the problem. I'm surprised nobody wrote the answer that I'm aware of. So I'm just saying it as best I can see at the moment. The table is a brand new creation every moment. And this poor Nokia cell phone, and you know, the memories, all that, my fingernails, brand new creation every moment. What about the soul? What about the soul? Is the soul a brand new creation every moment? Can you think of a problem? Some problem? If the soul were a brand new creation every moment?
I wouldn't see it as a problem. I just see that the soul is now redeemed as not in this world. So it doesn't have lots of localities that are right there.
Okay, suppose I add in that angels also are recreated every moment. Suppose I add that in.
Right.
Could be that they are. According to the explanation I'm going to give you, then the
job that they have to be, job.
That's right. That's right. So what would be a problem with saying that the soul, also like the table, is created every moment?
Well, the problem might be just culpability and reward. Can you point out that there's a distinction between recreation and new creation?
I'll talk about that in a minute. But let's imagine a brand new soul every moment. Now, imagine going to Olam Haba, to the world to come, and getting a reward for what? A reward for what? That other soul years ago did? How about being punished? I mean, everybody will take the reward. Why not? You know, it's a free gift. What about being punished? Do they... You ate that McDonald's cheeseburger. It wasn't me, boss. It wasn't me. You know, there's been millions of us since then. And if this was another one. I'm brand new. In fact, as I'm talking to you, there's more and more of us. You know, and everyone's brand new. Why should I be punished for what it did? It's not me. I want you to know that there's a religion in the world that makes this mistake big adult. Certain sources in Buddhism, when they talk about reincarnation, they say it's not really that soul that's reincarnated. It's another soul which inherits some of its characteristics from the previous soul. But what happens to the second one is determined by what happens to the first one. Well, I would say that that's not exactly clear. If it's the same soul, you say, okay, you're getting what you did. So if you're going to tell me there's a brand new soul every minute, reward and punishment is going to be very difficult to understand. Responsibility is going to be very difficult. Why am I responsible for what he did yesterday? You know, the guy wearing these clothes? Well, it wasn't these clothes. Similar clothes, right? The guy with the similar, you know, presentation yesterday. And it wasn't me. Somebody else. No, the other one that was created yesterday. So reward and punishment are going to be very, very difficult to explain unless you say that the soul's inception. Yeah.
You said also that the Torah,
boy, that's going to be very difficult because I don't know what the Torah means. If it means the parchment, you know, the animal skin that on which the words are written that are sitting in the Aaron Kodesh. Sure, because of physical logic. If it means the Torah in some other sense, I'm not sure what it is that we're talking about exactly. But, so the thought here is that the soul is an exception. It's an exception, and it's an exception because it's described as Chelek Elokam Imal, a piece of God on high, And just as he isn't recreated because he's not created at all, he just is. So maybe the soul, and he described as a piece of God on high, also could be permanent rather than having to be recreated every moment. Yeah.
Just back on the responsibility, before we take a step further, if this recreation of the universe is occurring every single moment, no one soul would be able to be tagged with anything because each soul is only occupying so small a space that there would be no concept of reward or punishment.
There's no action. It's too short for there to be any action. The action itself would be a whole string of souls, one after the other, and then you deprive the so-called person of any ability to do anything. It takes too long to do anything. I think you're absolutely right. Yeah.
I'd say it's still possible to say that the soul is indeed being created moment by moment, yet we are still culpable. Along the lines of why teshuvah works and why you lose the reward for a mitzvah if you regret doing the mitzvah. The reason being that when you get up to Olam Haba, God will say, bloody well right, if you didn't actually do that action, that was somebody else who looked a lot like you. However, if you, as you are today, had been in that situation, you would have done exactly that. And so you're rewarded or punished for that.
I don't see how that's going to work. If a person does tshuva, if the soul that's doing the tshuva isn't the soul that performed the crime, because it is newly created, so for what is it doing tshuva? For a crime somebody else did?
It's doing tshuva for the fact that if it had been in the same situation it was, say, last year.
But it isn't it. It's not the same it.
Teshuva is a transformation of your soul. And
but it's a transformation of your soul as a result of something that happened to it previously. But here isn't the same it. It might just as well be moving, not me hoping of it.
Who cares? You have the same ta'avot as that soul that did that action.
But that's by being born with them. You don't do tshuva if you're born with ta'avot. You don't do tshuva for that. Tshuva is not prescribed for that. But prescribed for that is a program of self-control, not tshuva. Tshuva is only because of what I did in the past.
The madriga, you're at this particular point. If you were in the same situation as Reuven, then you would do the action. And for that, you need to do tshuva as if you had actually done it.
No, not because it's not true. It's simply not true. That's true. If a person says, he did it, and I see in myself that if I were in that situation, I would do it also, he does not have to do tshuva. What he has to do is protect himself, and not tshuva. He doesn't have to confess that he's doing it, saying, I did it, and I'm sorry, and please forgive me. It's not relevant. It's not the same person. Yeah.
The sort of impartation in the words of Hashem's name recreated every minute,
okay, I'm going to answer this in a real quick way. This is very important because what happens on a computer screen? How can you turn off the screen which has Hashem's name on it? Are you allowed to do that? Huh? No, it isn't true. And here's the reason why. That's right. The computer screen is continuously flashing over and over again the same picture. When you turn it off, you're just preventing the next flash. You're not wiping off this. There is no this to wipe off. Each one lasts a fraction of a section, a second, and the next, another one comes on. So you're stopping a new one from coming on. You're not erasing the old one. Same thing. The email isn't the thing there. There's no thing called the email on the screen. It's being recreated as like television screen. Whatever the television screen. And the thing is spraying electrons, you know, and it's continuously spraying electrons.
We don't know what
we're working on the website.
Well, there it's stored in a hard drive someplace, and there it's not stored as a picture at all. It's stored as bits.
By the same argument, why couldn't we erase Hashem's name off parchment? Then it's flashing on the parchment every second.
Okay, it's the minus 33rd seconds.
The answer is that the mitzvah takes into account the continuity in the recreation, but the mitzvah is designed to take into account the continuity in the recreation. Not any other continuity, just continuity of the recreation. Here, in the television screen, there's discontinuity on the physical level. There's no discontinuity on the physical level. There's only discontinuity on the level of recreation. And the mitzvah takes into account, like everything does. It's my property because I bought it, not because it's a brand new thing. Right?
I think there has to be something linking the frames together. Like this,
only say like this because there's something that linked this brain.
This is what you must meditate on and overcome. The only thing that links it together is that each frame is put together by a producer who wants the frames in a certain order. There isn't anything linking the frames. Now you've got the main point. This is what you have to deal with. There's nothing linking the frames together. It's only an illusion. Just like a person never saw a movie picture before, walked into a darkened theater, and saw the thing up on the wall. He would think there were real people up there. Right? He says, no, there's no people there at all. But I can see them. What do you mean? They're walking, they're talking, they're jumping, they're throwing, they're catching. What do you mean there are no real people? No, they're just separate frames. Separate frames. Don't get taken in by the continuity. Now you're getting the point. That's good.